You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
Well, I'm Deborah, and other people may wander in, but I'll start with a little bit of background about how and why they happen to have a lawyer speaking at a biblical counseling conference with all these pastors and other people who do ministry. I've been hanging out with this group for about 30 years or so. And I'm not a certified biblical counselor. I'm a counselor at law. That's my calling. But I'm a former counselee. I spent probably the first 40 years of my life looking for answers in modern psychology. The last psychologist I ever saw left her profession and went into ministry. And I got more out of her ministry than I did her counseling. But although I thought when she left psychology, I thought the world was going to end, right? This was in the mid-80s. The world did not end, and I am still here, and I'm standing here today. But she had the nerve to die of cancer a couple of years later, the nerve. And then it's like, well, what now? I didn't have that ministry anymore. I didn't have that counseling relationship. But I had heard that counselor say that some of the stuff you have to learn to get licensed in the state of California, where I was living, some of that stuff is diametrically opposed to the Bible. I had never thought about the Bible and counseling at the same time. These were like two different compartments of life. And I have realized since that time that the counsel from God's Word affects every square inch of life. Well, I started to explore the issue and read everything that I could find to read, including the Bible, which even though I was a Christian, I hadn't ever been discipled, and I really didn't know the Bible well. And I stumbled onto J. Adams' books, which even though they were written to pastors, they helped me tremendously. And in reading those books, I discovered, aha, there's a place down in San Diego that has classes. It was at that time, Christian Counseling and Educational Foundation West. The original one was in Philadelphia. And that's now IBCD. And I met George Scipione, and I'm so honored to have his wife Eileen here in the audience today. It's so good to see her. But this is the first conference that I've come to without Skip being there. And I remember Jay Adams being there. It was a pleasure to finally get to meet him. And I listened to him at many of these conferences, and it was just such a blessing. So, but we know where they both are. And anyway, so that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But in the process of going to those classes at IBCD, I ended up hanging around Westminster Seminary. Some people really have to do things the hard way. So I ended up going to seminary to learn the Bible and to learn how to integrate the Bible with counseling for daily life. And I spent 6 wonderful years at that seminary. And I saw Skip and Jay quite a bit during those years. It was just a huge blessing. And I began to write critiques of psychology books, Christian and secular. And that helped sharpen up my own thinking. And in the process of doing that, some of the stuff that I wrote got to a prisoner in Wisconsin. And I got this incredible letter from him. Last year, when I did my session, I read that whole letter. But this prisoner had been told by his parole officer that if he ever wanted to get out, even on parole, he would have to go through some psychological program. And he realized, this prisoner realized, that the Word of God is what he needed. And he identified a pastor who was willing to counsel him. And the parole officer said, oh no, Christ is not enough. Well, this prisoner said in his letter, if I have to spend the rest of my life in prison, you know, Jesus died for me on the cross. I'd rather spend the rest of my life in prison than compromise the Word of God. And that just blew me away. What a testimony. How often do you hear that from anybody, let alone a prisoner? And he mentioned that he thought there might be a challenge under the First Amendment to the Constitution. Well, I graduated from law school. I mean, from seminary. Getting ahead of myself here. I graduated from seminary in May of 1998. And in September, I started law school. And so here I am. One thing led to another. When I was in law school, I wrote a paper that analyzed that prisoner's situation from the First Amendment standpoint. And a few years later, after I'd graduated from law school, one of my professors got me started writing friend of the court briefs, amicus briefs. And those are briefs where you're not representing the parties to the case, but you give the court information to help them make the right decision. So sometimes I'll zero in on something that the parties don't have time to cover or some special angle to help the court make the right decision. And so that's gotten to be the thing that I do. I've done that for about 15 years now. And a lot of what I'm going to talk about is going to be from cases that I have actually worked on. Before I get into all of that, I want to mention that in the materials that you can get online for this conference with my outline, there is a list of resources. Be sure you look at that. One of those resources is Alliance Defending Freedom. That's a wonderful Christian group, and they do a lot of litigation in this area, and many of the briefs that I write are to support the cases that they're working on. Some of those I'll be talking about this afternoon. They also have a church alliance program. That's a fairly new thing where member churches, they help member churches that are members of that program with religious liberty issues. Make sure that your documents are in order, things like that. They have a booth, an exhibit downstairs. They are getting ready to pack it up and leave during this next hour. So we have materials over here that probably the last 5 minutes or so. My cousin over here who came with me, Jeff, who counsels in his church, he's going to pass those things around so that you have them if they would be a benefit to your church. So that's a good resource. If you live here in North Carolina, which some of you perhaps do, the North Carolina Values Coalition is a marvelous organization. It's on my list. They do a lot of wonderful work. They got our marriage amendment passed. A friend of mine who is a Christian attorney is the founder of that organization, and she tries to keep our legislator on the right track. And that's a tough job that somebody has to do. That's not my job. My job is with the courts. Anyway, religious liberty is a really growing concern. It's been a concern for a long time, but it's building and it's really escalating right now. We do have a Supreme Court that is pretty good about defending religious liberty for right now. So I'll start off with just a little bit of good news, a decision that they made this past year, and it was a case that I wrote about, and it's called Fulton versus the City of Philadelphia. Catholic Charities has participated for over 100 years in helping place children in foster homes. Well, the state has pretty much taken over foster care. So in order for them to be involved at all, they had to have a contract with the city of Philadelphia. But Catholic Charities, because of their religious beliefs about the nature of marriage and family, they would not want to work with same-sex couples. Now, no same-sex couple ever asked them. I think they would probably know enough to go somewhere else, and there were plenty of other agencies that would work with same-sex couples. But the city of Philadelphia got bent out of shape and canceled the contract because of Catholic Charities religious views. Well, that went to the United States Supreme Court this past year, and the Catholic Charities prevailed. The city can't require them to abandon their basic core religious doctrine in order to participate in a public service like that. So that's good news. And there's a huge need in Pennsylvania for foster care. There are lots of children who need placement. And one of the things I started doing when I was in seminary is ministry with children who were removed from their homes for abuse and neglect. So I have a special place in my heart for that. So there's a little bright light there. The newer justices on the court are likely to be favorable toward religious liberty. Justice Gorsuch, in particular, has said good things. Justice Barrett. So we have a pretty good lineup for religious liberty. But that's the good news. There are lots of things to be concerned about. There's also some not so good news. You may have heard about the florist in Washington, in the state of Washington, who declined to custom design a floral arrangements for a male customer who wanted to marry another man. Her name's Baronell. I had the pleasure of meeting Baronell several years ago and meeting Jack Phillips with Masterpiece Cake Shop, two believers that have been through years of litigation in order to be faithful to their convictions about marriage and family. And it's amazing. These are godly people. They're quiet. They're not people that were seeking the limelight or seeking to hurt anybody by declining these same-sex couples. In fact, Baronell, the florist, the man who wanted a floral arrangement for his wedding to another man, he had been her customer for about 10 years, and she had served him. She knew he was a homosexual. He knew she was a Christian, and yet they had a respectful relationship. She took him aside and very gently said, I just can't do this. I love you. I'll do other." She would gladly do other kinds of floral arrangements for him, birthday or whatever. And he seemed to be okay with it, but the Washington Attorney General got involved, and the ACLU, and the man's partner, and Baronell ended up filing a petition with the U.S. Supreme Court. Alliance Defending Freedom represented her and also represented the cake baker. Well, those two petitions went in right around the same time. The court granted Jack Phillips' petition for the cake baking, and the florist petition kind of went on hold. It went on a watch list. I get a list of pending petitions every week from a guy in D.C., and that one stayed on the watch list for months and months and months. And after the decision in favor of Jack Phillips, the court granted the florist's petition, and they wiped out the decision of the Washington State Supreme Court and sent the case back and said, basically, think about this again in light of the decision that we just made in Masterpiece Cake Shop. And that's called grant, vacate, remand. GVR is what lawyers call it. Well, when the case went back to the Washington State Supreme Court, they didn't think very hard. They just rehashed the same stuff that they'd already said, and they ruled against the florist again. And so Baronell had to file another petition with the Supreme Court. Now, this stuff doesn't happen in a matter of weeks. This stuff takes years, years, years out of your life. If you ever have anybody in your congregation that's going through a lawsuit, they're going to need a lot of ministry, different kinds of ministry, not just lawyers, but yeah, a lot of prayer. Lawyers need prayer teams, seriously. But anyway, she had to file another petition. And this time, just this last July, the court denied it. Heartbreaking. But ADF has filed a petition for rehearing because there are, meanwhile, some other cases about creative professionals that are circulating, and there have been some other decisions made at the federal appeals court levels. And so, pray for Baronel. This woman, if she loses, she may lose her home, her retirement, all of her worldly finances. But she's willing to do that to because she loves the Lord and she wants to take a stand for her faith. Now, somehow I think hopefully the Christian community, the body of Christ, will gather support for that woman, and she won't be out on the streets sleeping in a tent. But it's been a real sacrifice. And Jack Phillips' family, they've had death threats, really been through a tough time. And Jack, even though he won at the Supreme Court, he's being sued again. And that's pending. And this time it has to do with a transgender cake. Somebody wanted a pink and blue cake for a transition from male to female or female to male, whatever it was. So that's going on. And I had somebody one day just in all seriousness say, why not bake the cake? Well, if it were merely a matter of baking a cake, I think Jack would do it. Many of us would do it. But that's not what it was about. It's about a message. Because what Jack Phillips would do if a couple came in and wanted a wedding cake, he would sit down and get to know them really well and custom create a design for their wedding. And so it's a lot of creativity, and it's personal services. I mean, I see an argument about involuntary servitude here, and that's another story that's something I'm focusing on in another brief soon to come. But it's not just a matter of baking a cake. If Jack Phillips would sell a cake off the shelf to that same couple, or a ready-made design, same thing with the florist. She would sell a floral arrangement that's sitting there in the shop, or that's part of a packet, you know, a pre-designed arrangement. But if she were to custom design, and she said, I just don't have it in me to do it because I'm a believer and I can't celebrate something, a marriage that isn't really a marriage according to the Word of God, and to do flowers for a wedding, she would probably have to go to it. So she'd be forced to go to a service celebrating something she can't celebrate. So there's a lot more to it than just selling a product. If it's a matter of selling a product, Christians will gladly serve anybody and sell somebody a ready-made product. But you may have counselees who are creative people who offer some kind of a service like that, and you might have to help them draw the line. And there may be other kinds of circumstances. I'm kind of focused on these wedding vendors right now because that's where a lot of the legal action is. But there are times people have to draw the line. At what point do you have to say, I can't do that because it violates my faith and my conscience? And so it's important to look at the scriptures with people and help them count the cost and draw the line. Well, another thing that has happened, the bathrooms, the transgender bathroom issue. You've probably all heard about that. Well, several years ago, there was a case that got all teed up and briefed and ready to go in the Supreme Court. It came out of the state of Virginia. There was a high school biological female, a girl, who decided that she was really a boy. And she demanded to be able to use the boys' bathrooms, showers, etc. So that made the round, that got litigated. And that was all ready to go to the Supreme Court. I wrote a brief about that. It was going in early 2017. Well, Trump won the election and reversed the Obama-era guidance that had demanded that public schools allow children to use the restrooms of their choice as far as their gender identity. And so the court dismissed the whole thing. It was moot at that point because the questionable guidance was no longer in effect. Well, with the change in administrations, that case got resurrected, and another petition got filed with the Supreme Court, and this time they just denied it. Disappointing. So we have that issue to deal with. And what happened there, too, is it was the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals that ruled that the school had to allow this transgender student to use the bathroom based on his or her gender identity rather than solely according to biological sex. They based their reasoning on a case that I talked about last year in one of my sessions, or probably both of them. And that was a case that involved employment law. And the court found that they redefined the word sex, basically, and said that under federal employment law, discrimination on the basis of sex includes discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. So an employer cannot fire someone for being homosexual or being transgender. There is a religious exemption in Title VII. Remember that. But the court was careful to, you know, recognize that there was a religious exemption. And the court was also careful to say, we're not talking about bathrooms, we're not talking about schools, we're just talking about employment. Well, the Fourth Circuit didn't catch that part. And so there are problems as a result. So that rationale, that reasoning that the Supreme Court gave us in the employment law context, lower courts are going to take that and run with it and do all kinds of damage. So there's that. Then another piece of bad news, Biden's first day in office, he signed a whole bunch of executive orders. One of them attempts to mandate this transgender type ideology across all the nation, every federal agency. And I printed this thing out, and I'll read you a little bit of it. If anybody wants to see a copy of this thing, I'll be glad to send it. But anyway, just policy. And some of this sounds good, some of it, but not really. Every person should be treated with respect and dignity, okay, and should be able to live without fear, no matter who they are or who they love. Children should be able to learn without worrying about whether they will be denied access to the restroom, the locker room, or school sports. Adults should be able to earn a living and pursue a vocation, knowing that they will not be fired, demoted, or mistreated because of whom they go home to, or because how they dress does not conform to sex-based stereotypes. People should be able to access health care and secure a roof over their heads, okay, without being subjected to sex discrimination. All persons should receive equal treatment under the law, no matter their gender identity or sexual orientation. Well, we could spend the afternoon dissecting that, because the things in there, we probably agree. Yeah, everybody, you know, we want people to have a roof over their heads, things like that. And people should have equal rights under the law, but they already do. These kinds of policies create special categories of rights, and they end up trumping other rights like religious liberty and free speech. And last year, and I'll mention this again, an analogy occurred to me. Our legal system is based on rights that are given by God, inalienable rights, like the right to life, the right to worship according to conscience. These rights, quote unquote, that are created by courts and even legislatures to things like abortion or sexual immorality, basically, they're like kind of like cancer cells. cancer cells get in and they attack the healthy cells and destroy the body. These rights, these manufactured rights, are like those cancer cells. They come into our legal system and they destroy, they try to override our God-given rights to worship and to speak freely. Anyway, another little paragraph I'll read out of here. The head of each agency, federal agency, shall, as soon as practicable and as appropriate and consistent with applicable law, including the Administrative Procedure Act, which they're kind of ignoring, consider whether to revise, suspend, or rescind such agency actions or promulgate new agency actions as necessary to fully implement statutes that prohibit sex discrimination and the policy set forth in Section 1. In other words, they want to reinterpret every law that mentions sex discrimination to prohibit sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination. So it's a major rewrite of the law. And that's not the only such rewrite that we're concerned about here. So, we have a lot of battles brewing in the courts. And there's one I just became aware of a couple of weeks ago that has to do with counseling. And it's good to know about it. It shouldn't affect any of you because you are biblical counselors, counseling under the authority of the church and the Word of God. But this is a law that regulates state-licensed counselors in the state of Washington. And it reminds me why I always recommend that counseling be done under the authority of the church and that you not pursue state licensing. But anyway, the state of Washington has passed a law that prohibits a licensed counselor from doing conversion therapy for anyone under age 18. And that conversion therapy would mean, even if that child, say, is a Christian and says, I'm experiencing same-sex attractions, I want to overcome that because I know that's not honoring to God. Or says, I feel like maybe I'm the other sex, but I want to honor God. I'd like to be comfortable with the gender, the sex that God gave me at my birth. That counselor is under a gag order, basically, based on this law. This law violates the free speech clause as well as the free exercise of religion clause. It's ridiculous, but it's not the first time this has happened. And some other courts have upheld those laws, but there's been intervening precedent from the U.S. Supreme Court that I think gives us a good chance of arguing that, hey, this law does violate this free speech and free exercise of religion clauses. So that's another one. That's going to the Ninth Circuit, and I'm sharpening the pencils, so to speak, to write one of my little briefs on that. I'm going to have fun with that because one thing I want to emphasize is that counseling is not a religiously neutral activity. Counseling is an inherently religious activity. There was a case some years ago, I think it's about 10 years ago now, that had to do with a graduate student in a counseling program who was expelled because she wouldn't counsel a homosexual and affirm a homosexual relationship. And ADF did a good job and prevailed in that case. And the court said tolerance is a two-way street. And so she won her case. But I remember writing in that, and I think I quoted Jay Adams and some other such people and talked about the religious nature of counseling. So I'm going to do that again. There are other creative professional cases that are currently being litigated as well. I already mentioned Jack Phillips and the transgender cake. There's a wedding photographer in the state of Virginia. Wrote a brief for him. He wants to photograph weddings, but Virginia passed something ironically called the Virginia Values Act that would force him, if he wants to do weddings photography for opposite sex couples, he would have to offer the same thing to same sex couples. And again, how do you photograph a wedding without attending the ceremony? So he could, that would compel him to attend a religious ceremony that he does not believe in, and to celebrate something, celebrate a message that he doesn't believe. And things like photography, it's not just point and shoot. They do a lot of editing to tell a story. There's also a case about a website designer in Colorado. The Tenth Circuit ruled against the website designer. ADF is filing a petition, and that's another brief that I'm writing to support their case and urge the court to take that so this, that this issue will get to the Supreme Court. There have been a couple of favorable decisions. In the Eighth Circuit, there were some video producers who produced videos about weddings to tell the story, and these are Christians, and they won. The Eighth Circuit said you can't force them to create something that tells them, conveys a message that they don't believe. And there were also some wedding invitation designers in Arizona who prevailed in the Arizona Supreme Court. So there are decisions going both ways, and when that happens, that's what pushes it often up to the U.S. Supreme Court. So stay tuned. Next year, there will be an update on these things. Another thing that's going on as far as conscience and the LGBT agenda is in the healthcare industry, where there's a lot of pressure on healthcare providers to facilitate sex transitions from male to female or female to male. And of course, there's also the pressure with abortion and contraception. So when we had the Obamacare contraception mandate, there were cases that made the rounds in all the federal circuit courts, and then that went up to the Supreme Court. I ended up getting admitted in all the circuits because I kept recycling the same brief. And so here we go again. I can bring that same stuff out and recycle. So there's that. Abortion is still an issue. There's a major case right now that the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on December 1st. And that case, they could potentially overrule Roe v. Wade. That would be wonderful. That case came from the state of Mississippi. Mississippi passed a law that bans abortions after 15 weeks or something, and that is supposedly prior to the point of viability. So Mississippi actually has asked the Supreme Court to overrule Roe v. Wade. And there's another one, not as well known, Casey versus Planned Parenthood from 1992 that reaffirmed Roe, but then established this undue burden standard that states can't pass a law that unduly burdens, places an undue burden on women seeking abortions. So we hope that would be overruled also. But we'll see. Sometimes the court kind of hesitates to overrule its prior rulings. But I hope they do. But even if they do, the whole thing will revert to the states. And so you're going to have different laws in different states. And in any event, you're still going to have pregnant women who need wise biblical counsel. But it's good to know what's going on in the courts. And also to remember, if you have a young woman who really does not want to have an abortion and is being pressured maybe by a boyfriend or a parent or somebody, she has the right to refuse that abortion. So that's an important thing for you to know as biblical counselors. Education, that's another thing. And some of that is related to these LGBT challenges, but not all of it. Funding is an issue. Last year, there was a case where the Supreme Court said, if a state wants to fund private education, they don't have to, but they can. But if they decide to, they cannot exclude a school just because it's a religious school. So that was good news. But now we're going to tweak that a little bit more. In the state of Maine, there are some areas where they don't have any public secondary schools, high schools. And so the state has said, okay, we will pay for private schooling in those areas. And the parents get to choose the schools. And it's okay if the school has a religious affiliation. But if they're going to use it for religion, like if they're going to actually integrate their faith into the curriculum, oh, then they don't want to fund that school. And the way they figure that out is the Maine Department of Education goes in and looks at the curriculum. That's a big constitutional no-no. That's called entanglement. They're not supposed to get entangled in religious doctrine that way. So I think this one will go the right way. That's another one that will be argued soon. That's another little fun brief that I got to write this summer. This was a summer of briefs. Yes. Boom, 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 boom. And meanwhile, Congress wants to codify the right to abortion. They're trying to pass some legislation that would nationalize a right to abortion. Now, I'd like to think that's unconstitutional because the Constitution has something about a right to life. That's what I'd like to see happen. But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. Back to the LGBT thing. There's another case. Another bit of fallout from the executive order affects schools that have dormitories. And the Fair Housing Act protections could, if that's extended to the sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination issue, there's a directive. I'm going to read you something that ADF has said because they filed a challenge, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But the directive from the Fair Housing, from the government, declares that the Fair Housing Act's protections against discrimination on the basis of sex now includes sexual orientation and gender identity. That means every college and university, including those grounded in Christian convictions and biblical beliefs, can be forced to open their dorms, locker rooms, bathrooms, and shared shower spaces to members of the opposite sex. This new directive applies to private religious college campuses, even if they turn down every cent of federal money in keeping with their strong First Amendment convictions, and there's no way out. Okay. What ADF has filed with that, because there's a very courageous college, College of the Ozarks in Missouri, and they have dormitories. In fact, it's a work college. The students come and they work and they earn their keep and they stay there on campus. Now, the college doesn't rent housing to the general public. It's just for their student body. But they have strong convictions there about the nature of marriage and sexuality, and they want to separate the female dorms and the male dorms, and they have rules about visitors in keeping with their religious faith. So they have stepped up to bat, and ADF has filed a pre-enforcement challenge. And there's a tough standard to do that, but and it takes some courage to do it rather than to just wait and kind of hope you can fly under the radar and wait until somebody sues you. They've taken the offensive position, this college has, and filed this pre-enforcement challenge saying, it's inevitable that this is going to be enforced against us. You need to rule now that it's a violation of the First Amendment and the Religious Freedom and Restoration Act. So anyway, that's another thing that's happening. And speaking of schools, you may have heard on the news or elsewhere, there's a lot of confusion and chaos and anger over curriculum, sex education, and critical race theory. I'm not going to get into details about those things, but I know a lot of parents are concerned. Lots of people are concerned. If you have kids in public schools, know what they're teaching. There are a lot of grassroots efforts for people to monitor their school boards and to know what's going on and to get people elected who are not going to vote for these kinds of things. So that's just another issue of religious liberty to be aware of. Or homeschool. A lot of people are homeschooling. And with the coronavirus, too, that's one thing about it is with kids on Zoom, looking at classes on Zoom, sometimes parents have become aware of what they're actually being taught when maybe before they didn't know. Well, now they know. And so a lot of people are up in arms. And there is also, I hope this just goes nowhere, but there's a group called the Religious Exemption Accountability Project. Well, this is a group that formed and filed a suit in Oregon against the United States Department of Education to rescind and prohibit all exemptions based on religious beliefs as applied to sexual and gender minorities. And so they want to do away with the religious exemptions that are written into the law. And if they're successful, religious schools would not be able to operate according to their views of marriage and sexuality. So I hope that doesn't go anywhere. I'm just aware that it's been filed. I haven't seen any more about it, but it's another thing to watch. ADF filed 2 cert petitions in August that both have to do with the freedom of religious organizations to hire people who agree with their religious missions and will be able to carry out with their religious mission. One of them rises out of the state of Washington, and it was filed by the cases Seattle's Union Gospel Mission. And this gospel mission does a lot of things to help people, and one of the things they do is they offer some legal help. And so they were going to hire an attorney. Well, someone applied and said he was bisexual. And they said, no, we need to have you agree with our religious mission. And religious organizations commonly will require employees and volunteers to sign off on a statement of faith and also conduct themselves, you know, to the extent human as possible, the best their ability, in accordance with that code of conduct. Well, this attorney filed a lawsuit against the gospel mission for discrimination. Again, sexual orientation and all of that. And the Washington Supreme Court ruled against the gospel mission in favor of this attorney. So ADF filed a petition in the Supreme Court. We'll see where that goes. There's also the whole concept of ministerial employees, and that's a broader concept than the preacher who preaches from the pulpit on Sunday. It can include teachers in a religious school that teach children because they're carrying out the religious mission of the school. Well, there is a college, Gordon College, in Massachusetts. And the question is whether a professor of social work qualifies as a ministerial employee, which I would think so, because that's, again, the kind of thing that is not religiously neutral. So those battles continue. Now, that's the courts. There is also, any of you heard of the so-called Equality Act that passed the House of Representatives? They haven't passed the Senate. I hope it never does. Just pray that it doesn't. I think it's unconstitutional on its face, but they didn't ask me. This is... but... got a sip of water here. This very dangerous legislation would mandate that all anti-discrimination laws across the nation protect homosexuality and transgenderism with no religious exemptions. Now they're explicitly targeting religion in the law. That is so unconstitutional on its face that it isn't even funny. But again, I may need to be litigated. My friend Kim Colby at the Christian Legal Society, a staff attorney that I've known for years, wrote an article about it, and I've made some notes from her article, and will quote some things that she said about it, because she's done a real extensive study of it. The Equality Act is an unqualified disaster for all Americans' religious freedom, as well as for their individual freedom. This law, if it were passed, stretches across all areas of public life, public accommodations, education, federal financial assistance, employment, housing, just everything, which is what that executive order is also trying to do. The Equality Act utilizes a simple formula for determining winners and losers. Any LGBT claim, no matter how unfounded, trumps any religious freedom defense, no matter how strong. And it explicitly rules out the Religious Freedom and Restoration Act as a defense. Now, that leaves us with the First Amendment. There is a decision from 1990 about the Free Exercise Clause that really needs to be overruled, because it's what led to the passage of the Religious Freedom and Restoration Act. And that case said that if a law is neutral and generally applicable, then there's no absolute right to a religious exemption. But when we talk about neutrality, I don't think these things are religiously neutral. They're not. They're not religiously neutral. But anyway, one possibility for this kind of a law, if it passed, it could affect the tax-exempt status of religious organizations, and that's important. People are going to need to be willing to give, even if they don't get a tax write-off. This law has a very, very, very broad definition of public accommodation. And anti-discrimination laws typically apply to public accommodations. And they started out with things like, you know, transportation and hotels, and major things, common carriers, understandable. And it started out with racial discrimination, which we needed to eliminate that. But now this broad definition under the Equality Act includes non-physical places, non-commercial activities, and any individual who provides a good service or program that affects commerce. It essentially makes every American a potential public accommodation. Maybe even me and my laptop, and I don't know, I hope not. And it would extend to a religious congregation that accepts federal security grants, historic preservation grants, or FEMA funding to repair hurricane damage to a house of worship. So it's just very expansive. We need to pray a lot. It will detrimentally impact religious colleges that accept federal research grants, students who receive any federal aid, faith-based homeless shelters or organizations that place children for adoption or foster care. And there's already been something with a homeless shelter for women where a man came claiming to be a woman. That, I think, happened in Alaska. I'm not sure how that turned out. There's so many things, but they don't all of them stick in my brain all the time. Religious hospitals would have to provide gender transition surgeries or hormones and abortions. And the housing provisions would affect nursing homes and, again, homeless shelters, and present the kind of challenges that we see with the colleges of the Ozarks, who have private facilities separated on the basis of biological sex. And finally, Another whole area of to consider with religious liberty is the COVID restrictions and the vaccine mandates that have come up. Alliance Defending Freedom has some information on their website that to help people that want to apply for a religious exemption from the vaccine. Pacific Justice Institute has similar materials and assistance. So there are organizations that will help people that want to try to come up with a religious exemption. But I'm sure this whole COVID thing, somebody could do a breakout session on the counseling issues that have emerged as a result, because there's just been a lot of damage, not just the disease itself and losing loved ones, but businesses and isolation and all, just a lot of issues have arisen. And now we've got religious liberty issues on top of the whole thing. It was bad enough. I have some recommended reading that I want to mention. Free to Believe by Luke Goodridge of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. And I just put them up here. I don't do high tech, so this is low tech, but I put them out here on the table. That's a good book. I mentioned that last year in my talk. But then Religious Liberty in Crisis by Ken Starr. That's a good book. Also, I've read that cover to cover. And finally, which I don't have it with me, John Piper wrote a little book called Coronavirus and Christ that is just wonderful. Just, it doesn't talk about really the virus itself, but it talks about the sovereignty of God and the way God puts people in different places and uses everything for his glory, and real blessing. It was written in 2020, but it's timeless. So that's what I have, and we've got some materials here that we'll pass out, and I'm happy to, anybody has any questions or comments or situations.
Do you think Airbnbs will be under the housing thing?
I'm sure it will. Airbnb under the housing thing. In fact, Airbnb, I remember looking, just wanting to browse. And to even do that, they require you to sign a non-discrimination policy. And I thought, I don't know if I want to sign that or not. So I've never used them. But a lot of Christians do Airbnb. I mean, it's a wonderful little idea. But
let me tell you, they test you now.
They do.
Yes, so like I know I had a couple, I think it was a lesbian couple, asking to park to book, and I said, well, those rooms were filled because it actually were. They said, well, do you have any table? So I think they realize where I'm coming from. Jesus Christ is actually mentioned to me. So I think they're going to target.
Yes, and if you didn't hear that, a lesbian couple tried to book on Airbnb a person who's a Christian, and that's known through her advertisement. And so, yes, that's definitely going to be an issue. And I thought maybe as a consumer, I don't know what exactly it would mean if I were going to book on Airbnb. Yes?
In that case for Green versus Wilson County, did they offer the student also the option to be in like a gender-neutral bathroom, but the student didn't want that option?
Yes. In the transgender bathroom case, yes, the school had offered a single-sex bathroom, which sounds like a perfect solution. And we may get to a point where that's all we ever all we have in buildings is a little single-sex. But that wasn't good enough because that stigmatized, allegedly, the student. Even though that bathroom was available to any student. Let's see. I had one over here and then over there.
I just have a question. Is this affecting any other kids? Because there are things like, you know, yeshivas or synagogues or mosques or women and men have to be separated, or
okay, yeah, is this affecting other faiths? Well, I'm sure it is. One place, if you wanted to know more about that, the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, they litigate issues for any kind of faith, not just Christian. Alliance Defending Freedom is strictly a Christian organization. So I would look at Beckett Fund, and they've had some cases, and they set precedent that is useful for us too, for Christians. So yes, yes. And we had a question over here. Yes.
Is there any resource or podcast or something that you would recommend for us to keep updated on these things, like what's entering into the courts and whatnot?
There are all kinds of resources. If you look at the materials that were on the on ACBC, I have a list of resources. And if you can't find it, my I think my email is on my outline that is there, but it's there with the outline. There's a long list of resources, and they're just all kinds of, there's so many things. I get a zillion things every day. Mm-hmm. And you can sign up for email lists, and you'll get a wealth of information. My counsel is to have it under the church and not a separate corporation. And I say that as a religious liberty lawyer. And for years, it's like I thought, you know, separate corporations were a wonderful thing to limit liability for high-risk activities. But in this case, because the courts still respect church autonomy. That's a little phrase that they use, the internal management of a church. If you're counseling and that's part of your church ministry, yeah. But it's still good. It would be wise for you to look into this ADF's church alliance and be sure you have your ducks in a row, your documents and stuff.
Thank you. Thanks for your work, Beth.
Thank you.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So in our community, a number of our medical professionals are going to be required to get the vaccine. And a number of medical archers that are members are struggling with that. And so they've come to our pastor asking him to sign documents to try to help them come up with a religious reason not to get the shot. I'm concerned for our pastor in fact he's signing some of that. What's your advice there?
Well, actually, a religious exemption has to be based on your personal, individual, sincerely held religious beliefs. A letter, you're not required to have a letter from a pastor. Now, a letter from a pastor might just confirm that, yeah, I know this person, and that's a, you know, I believe these are his sincerely held beliefs, but you don't have to have it validated by a pastor. Yeah, cough. It's going to be hard. Depends on what state you're in. And again, it's good to have legal advice. And that reminds me, too, to say I am admitted to the bar in North Carolina and California, but not the other 48 states. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get into federal court, and that's where most of my stuff is, but sometimes I've had contacts from wonderful people that I've met at ACBC or who have seen my name wanting help, and they're in some other state, and I'm like, I'd love to work with an attorney that you find, but you need a local attorney in your state, and I'm happy to help guide them if that. But yeah, and there's where it could be helpful to have a corporation. But like the florist, they sued her personally, even though she had a corporation.
So for those who are pastors involved in counseling ministries, do you have any like words of wisdom regarding to what extent should we be involved in either preventing or going on the offense, like this one college in Missouri did regarding some of these things happening around us? I know it depends from state to state.
And it depends on what you're doing. Like this college, they know with the dormitories separated by biological sex, they know that this is going to apply to them. And so they went on the offensive. But a church, not necessarily. But again, it's, you know, things are changing rapidly. If this Equality Act is passed, a lot of people are going to have to do a line up a lot of ducks.
Just like be informed. And
be informed, definitely.
Be in contact with Christian attorneys.
Exactly. A Christian attorney that's in your state. And Christian Legal Society is a good source. Their website, you can look up and find them, try to find an attorney in your state. Or look, you know, your congregation. There may be attorneys in your congregation. And if they don't know that area, they might help you find somebody who does. And there are a lot of, like, my list of resources, and it's not exhaustive because there are so many wonderful organizations out there that help. And there are state-specific organizations. Every state has a family policy council of some kind. There's a North Carolina Family Policy Council. And so there's some really good resources out there. And that's why I do this, you know, to help people not only know what's going on, but be sure that you can get connected. Church tax, there's a church law and tax report that I've always liked too, and it has a lot of good resources. Well, I think it's about time for us to go here. Thank you.
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.